Welcome to Red Meat, a collection of the tastiest tidbits from Odyssey's conservative news talk radio stations across the country, a place where we're not afraid to dig in. Today, we're focusing on the breakup heard round the world. Elon and Donald. Lots of people said it wouldn't last, and it turns out they were right. But the richest man in the world and the president of the United States at war brings up a lot of questions. Let's kick it off with a table setter on what's gone down so far. Here's Ted Mann of Bloomberg News talking to WWJ in Detroit.
It started in earnest with Musk coming out against Trump's tax bill, describing it as an abomination that would explode deficits. This is right as the White House is working very hard to try to push this thing through the Senate. And over the course of last night and today, the two have gone from essentially insulting each other to offering threats. Trump has threatened to cancel the contracts that SpaceX depends on for a huge portion of its revenues. He's threatening to go after subsidies that Tesla enjoys that are a big part of the value of that company. Just a few minutes ago, Musk responded by saying that he was going to decommission the Dragon rocket, which is a SpaceX rocket that right now is a primary way that astronauts get to space and that the space station is serviced. So there, it's a war of words, and it's not quite clear yet how either one of these guys might get off this course or try to de-escalate.
Talk about how much pull does Elon Musk have with Congress, and is it enough to save the EV tax credit?
Well, I think we're about to learn. Speaker Mike Johnson Musk called it Johnson to ask for the EV tax credits to be restored. They would be cut in the bill that is currently before the Senate. Musk has said in the past and then again in just the past day that he would be okay with those credits going away. That would be a big hit to his business, but he has said his objection is much more about spending. Trump, of course, is saying the opposite, and that really Musk is just mad because this is a subsidy that his business would rely on. It's going to really put a lot of Republicans in a hard position, I think, where they're going to have to choose between fealty to Donald Trump, which is essentially what drives the party right now, and loyalty to Musk, who is right now siding with some of the spending hardliners who are already against some of the provisions of this bill, especially because it would add so much to the deficit.
So, Ted, where do we go from here with all of this?
It's a very good question. Every time we look up, there's a new tweet or a new statement from the president. Right now, I think one of the first things that will have to become clear is how serious Trump is about going after something like SpaceX's contract. That would be a huge deal for a very important company. SpaceX, of course, is the leader right now in that launch business, and the government depends on its services in addition to paying for them. So it remains to be seen how real a threat that is, and if he'd be able to do it legally, because a lot of these are, you know, contracts after all. And then, you know, we don't quite know how serious Musk is about decommissioning a rocket or sort of ceasing to provide that service. And then right now, Trump is still saying that he's calling on everyone in the Senate, in the Republican side, to go ahead and push this bill through. And that still is the main domestic policy priority of the president. So they're going to keep pressing. We don't quite know if either one of these guys is going to be able to sort of, you know, pull off, or they're just going to keep playing chicken.
Breakup began over the big, beautiful bill in Congress, with Elon Musk criticizing it and pushing for spending cuts. Here's more on that with Tara Servatius at WORD Radio.
I don't know. Elon Musk doubled down yesterday on his criticism of the big, beautiful bill. I don't know who intended what for whom, but I will tell you this. Musk has really notched some wins in the last week that we can all get behind. Here's what's interesting. Representative Tim Burchett laid this out. A week ago, I was wheeling on GOP leadership because they were refusing to bring the DOGE cuts forward and the rescission bills that'll actually do the cuts. And they were saying, not until after the big, beautiful bill passes, and, you know, and maybe not after that. Well, they trended again and again and again on X. They were absolutely torn apart after Elon Musk's CBS News interview a week ago, which he, you know, expressed he was just very frustrated with Congress not wanting to do the DOGE cuts because they don't want to do the DOGE cuts. He forced Mike Johnson, our speaker, to respond during his vacation. something, believe me, he did not want to do. And Trump dropped the bill on Monday, something he wouldn't have been able to do had Musk not marshaled that. Tim Burchett, Representative Tim Burchett, one of my favorites up there, just announced the good news. They just had the rules changes that will begin to allow the Doge cut bills to come. It's not just Doge cuts, not just stuff Doge found. It's also other stuff that really we just need to begin to cut. Here you go.
Two bills. Previous question. It just allow a bill to get forward and a rule which moves, allows us to vote on several of the Doge bills. So we're moving in that direction. Finally, folks, I guess we kind of put the fire to some people's feet.
We finally put the fire to some people's feet. No, that was Elon raising these questions. Good for him. Good for him. And look, folks, I don't actually think Elon Musk saying anything is going to be a roadblock to anything. I think the real problem that we're that they're going to have getting this big, beautiful bill through is John Thune right now and SALT, as boring as that is. So we got all these Republicans from these blue states like California, New Jersey, New York, who are in Congress, right? They want assault. They want the top level SALT deduction. In other words, Democrats in their state have really high taxes and they want their taxpayers to be able to write it off, to escape the pain. Look, if you're a Republican and you choose to live in a blue post-American, post-constitutional territory, that's on you, bud. You got to pay the taxes. You don't get a break. And then they just turn around and use the write-offs to raise more taxes. Well, the SALT deduction is what this thing got hung up over. We had Republican Congress members in the House wanting to let their constituents out of it. No, move to Florida. Migrate. It's what your ancestors did to get away from tyranny. You need to do it too. Let them collapse. And so John Thune, head of the Senate yesterday, said, look, we don't care about SALT. We don't have senators from New York. We don't have senators from New Jersey. We don't have senators from California. We don't care. We're not letting those people off the hook. Not our problem. Here's the thing. Here's the great irony of this. You know how much the SALT provision adds to the deficit? $350 billion. In other words, if they got rid of that, if they just got rid of that part, this thing would actually satisfy Rand Paul, probably Thomas Massie, definitely Chip Roy. It would probably come in as a slight deficit reduction if we could get rid of that. And it would do what Elon Musk wants too. So there's actually a pretty easy way forward to fix this if we can flip a couple of votes because, folks, they were down, what, two votes in the House? Three, depending on how you count it. And a lot of that was just over SALT. Their constituents can't afford to live in these post-American blue territories with the high taxes, and they just want a write-off. And guess who pays for that? Guess who subsidizes that? That's you and me. Why? Because then they got to print the money to cover the write-off. They got to borrow. It's $350 billion. This solves all our problems. This would make everybody happy. We got to get a handful of Republicans to just drop it. And that's real. I mean, honestly, that's the biggest thing right now, because that's what it came down to in the House. And Mike Johnson was able to get it passed with one vote. So when you look at and folks, yeah, the Congressional Budget Office, everybody's picking on them. Oh, they're lying. They're Democrats. Yeah. But the Tax Foundation, they're not Democrats. They're Republicans. They're conservatives. And they're saying the same thing. This is bigger deficit spending than Biden did. It's true. Raises the deficit. It's true. And look, I'm not going to wail on Elon Musk for saying true things. We say true things that are hard all the time on this show. I'm not going to wail on him. He did nothing wrong. He's trying to save the country. And here's the other problem with this, folks. Because I'm going to be honest with you. This is what Jamie Dimon was saying. It's what Ray Dalio is saying. It's what Elon Musk has warned us about on and on and on and on and on and on. The bond market has wobbled twice in the last 2 months. Let me tell you why. Everybody thought, yeah, the Democrats are out of control, but the Republicans will come in and save us. That's what everybody thought. That has backstopped our bonds. Led people to say, well, it'll be fine. The Republicans will, you know, they'll reinstill sanity. I'm going to keep the bonds in my portfolio. I'm going to keep them as part of my retirement investment mix. It scared people when the Republicans are like, hold my beer. We'll go bigger than Biden. Musk is not wrong. Let me tell you what, okay? And we're going to work this out, all right? This thing's going to pass. Everything's going to be fine. Don't be stressed about it. Don't be angry at people. We need to have this conversation. And if Musk had not notched these wins in the last week, he's forcing Mike DeKnife and John Thune to begin doing the rule changes that are going to lead to 12 of these bills. Have you noticed something? Hold on with the music, Tim, because this is very important. Have you noticed something? Trump's doing something really smart here. We know it's in the first, but it's only $9.4 billion. That's okay. That's a start. That's a litmus test. It cuts NPR, it cuts PBS, and it ties it. This is brilliant. It also does the U.S. aid cuts, which people like Lindsey Graham, who are sleazy CIA whores, don't want cut. So it makes you do this. You got to fund NPR and PBS, bud. You're going to get a primary challenger. Now go ahead and make the U.S. aid cuts. Got that agency for us. It's tough. It's mean. It's why Republican leadership doesn't want it. Elon Musk single-handedly got it into Congress. You can thank him for that. And behind that, this is the brilliant thing, are 11 other bills, according to Russ Vogt, OMB director. What's in them? What are we going to cut? He won't say. Good. Keep that close to the pocket. We're going to get to, I don't know, $250, $300 billion? Or we're going to make Republicans go on the record, finally, individually. Do you want to cut or not? You ran on it. Good. Good. And that'll stabilize the bond market if we can get them passed. But folks, I'm warning you, and Musk is not wrong on this. We pass this monstrosity in its current form. There is a chance, not predicting it, given what the bond market's done the last 2 months, there is a chance we get a debt crisis. What is a debt crisis? Everybody keeps using that word. I wish somebody would explain. It's very simple. People go, oh my gosh, I was counting on the Republicans to have some sanity. Instead, they are increasing the budget deficit. I can't do this anymore. I'm going to dump my bonds. So at the same time, we're selling a ton of bonds to fund this, you know, the ridiculous size of this bill, which does bust the deficit, and it is higher than Biden spending all of it. They start dumping their bonds because it scares them that the government's selling more bonds. That's a crisis. And this bill, don't kid yourself, could do that. No one wants to have that conversation. We need to have it. But there's an easy way around it. We have got to drop the SALT deduction. It saves $350 billion. That, you know what? Then we're under the deficit. We can lower it a little bit. Okay, make the stupid idiots at the CBO. They're not going to be able to deny it. That'll fix it. And hopefully calm the bond market. And we're okay. If that doesn't do it, if the bond markets can just see, even though it's only $9 billion, I know it's a drop in the bucket, but if they can see Republicans are willing to, they're willing to cut that. And then there's another 11 of these bills behind it, much bigger ones. We won't say what yet. And that's smart. That's really smart. The bond markets go, oh, and they'll get what I get. Trump intends to cut all this. We're going to wipe out another $250 billion. You know, we're going to wipe out another $250 billion. Oh, they got rid of SALT. Where are we at now? We're at half a trillion cut, quarter deficit. You got to give the bond markets a hint that's where you're going. Musk got us a shot at that this week by getting the two Doge bills passed, the rules bills, which basically allow us to bring the bills forward, and getting it on the agenda when Mike DeKnife and John Thune were blocking it. So you know what? Don't get mad at Elon Musk. Thank him. We are the party that is not afraid of the truth. We are not afraid of the truth. We're not going to call people stupid and crazy. We're going to get it together and we're going to pass it. And it's okay. It's going to be okay. And I just personally, I want to thank Elon Musk, much the way I thanked Ralph Norman for his courage. We need patriots like that. Even when it's not fun in the moment, we're going to get through this. And what he's doing may actually backstop that big, you know, BBB bill and prevent a bond market wobble. That, folks, this could be really good.
Tommy Tucker at WWL Radio in New Orleans pointed out there are people who think the whole breakup is smoke and mirrors, a fake feud, if you will. But who would win in that case? Hear more with Tommy and Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center.
Let's talk about the big rift here between Elon Musk and Donald Trump. Some people are texting in, apparently saying that they think it's all a smoke and mirror thing, that it's a big game. I don't know what the end game would be here. Thoughts?
Oh, I don't know what to think about this because we're getting bits and pieces from various leakers, I would say, within government who have their own positions and they're trying to play on that slippery, greasy pole of power. I think there are a lot of people that were in the Trump administration that didn't like Musk in there at all. Mm-hmm. An outsider, somebody who jumped into the campaign late. Musk, I'm sure, doesn't like a lot of the other people within the Trump administration who he sees as kind of the typical problem within Washington, not moving fast, inefficient, and so forth. So the egos come into play, and I don't know if you've seen some of the research on this, upwards of 60 to 70% of all the news about the federal government either comes from direct releases by government agencies or by leaks from government officials. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're getting a lot here. It does sound like there are some real problems with the expense side of the big, beautiful bill in the eyes of Musk, but that's probably true in the eyes of a lot of other Republicans in the House and the Senate who aren't willing to stand up and say much about it because, you know, frankly, their positions may rely on being nice to Trump, where for Musk, he's an independent actor here. So I'm not willing to say one way or the other what I think about what's going on, because frankly, I don't know, and
who,
I don't think any
knows?
Of us really know.
Exactly. Who knows? That's exactly right. Who knows, and who knows who has what on what? I was kidding around
it's
when we started.
Opera, though.
Yeah, by playing Al Wilson the Snake, because Donald Trump on a campaign trail back in the day used to talk about "Take me in, no tender woman," and you knew I was a snake when you brought me in. And that's the only thing I could think of yesterday when I heard about this. It's like, well, you kind of knew who you were doing business with when you brought him in, so... One thing that I do have a problem with is, you know, Donald Trump saying that he's going to cut SpaceX contracts, and Elon Musk saying he's going to do decertify whatever he's going to do with his spacecraft. But I don't know that we should be doing business with SpaceX or Elon Musk because of a friendship between Donald Trump and Elon Musk. Either it's a good deal for the government and the taxpayers and the country, or it's not. If it's a good deal, well, then you do it whether you like Musk or not. If it's a bad deal, you shouldn't have done it in the first place, right?
I agree with you there. This is one of the bigger problems that I've seen both from the Democratic and Republican administrations, is really choosing who their friends and their enemies are and using the power of the government to reward them or punish them. Mm-hmm. That's getting into kind of banana republic territory. And that, I think, is a troubling long-term trend that we've had in America.
So let's talk about this big, beautiful bill. They say ostensibly this breakup is about the big, beautiful, if you want to call it that, a breakup, is about rift. Let's call it a rift. Dust up is about the big, beautiful bill. And do we know exactly what it's going to do to the debt and deficit?
Not exactly, because what we've got are estimates from the Congressional Budget Office, and those are tend to be fixed. They don't really look at the kind of the economic impact of things like tax cuts, because, you know, tax cuts certainly will lower revenue, but they also typically expand the GDP and expand the size of the economy, which brings in more tax revenue. So we've been having these arguments about tax estimates, revenue estimates by the CBO going back at least to the Reagan administration. So I don't think we quite know. It's probably a good idea, probably a good bet, though, that it will increase the debt, because it seems like everything that goes on in Washington increases the debt.
It is an interesting political discussion, though, because I know a lot of texts I got from people when Elon Musk was the in guy, when he was in the clique, sitting at the lunch table, that he was the greatest thing in the world. Now, all of a sudden, he's not the greatest thing in the world? Or how does this affect the I don't know if you want to call it the MAGA nation, or I don't know. How would you describe this, Andy?
I think that those MAGA guys who went out and bought Cybertrucks are probably looking at those things saying, how do I get rid of this ugly mm-hmm. car? I think that there is a real control that Trump has over top of his people, and folks willingness to listen to what Trump identifies as good or bad and go along with it, and then rationalize why what they're believing is correct. I've said that before. Rationalization is a strong thing. You got a lot of people doing a lot of rationalization about their support for Trump.
I didn't even think about the vehicle part of it. What are those ugly trucks? What do you call them? Cyber trucks?
The cyber truck. The Tesla Cybertruck, which I think has to be the ugliest car ever made. Sorry for those people who have them, but
not a big fan. It looks like a paramilitary vehicle. And then if that's what you want, that's fine. It's your money. You can spend it however you want. It looks like what?
It looks like a Lego toy.
I also wouldn't make the second largest purchase in your life that you're going to make based on a political decision, because the political winds can change. However, you're paying for that for 7 or 8 years, or you're out a bunch of cash if you paid cash for it. Let's talk about how this falls on the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, and on the congressional members, both House and Senate, when it comes to this big, beautiful bill, and then what happens procedurally as we move on. Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center, talking about the big, beautiful bill and the rift between Donald Trump and Elon Musk. And who knows? They'll either patch it up today. There's no telling.
It's safe to say we're in uncharted territory with this rift. And a lot of people are wondering just how far Trump and Musk will go to win the hearts and minds of the country. Not to mention who will win more support for their view of what should happen in the next budget. Here's more with WWL Radio in New Orleans.
The breakup of the most high-profile bromance ever between the most powerful man in the world and the President of the United States and the wealthiest man in the world in Elon Musk. To help us understand, if we can, what's going on, we asked Robert Hogan to join us, professor and department chair of political science at LSU. Good morning, Professor Hogan.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Well, you know, we call it political science, but are we into political chaos at this point? Is there any science left to what we're seeing unfold before our eyes?
Yeah, I don't know. Or maybe political theater might be a better way to describe it. Yeah, we've not seen anything like this before. I mean, you know, there are stories of wealthy people who have, you know, helped a president get elected, and they sort of expect things, and they may blow up and may have some argument or something that people learn about years later. But nothing like this, where it's all out in the open and in the public and on social media in real time, we see this spat play out. This is something that that we have not obviously seen before. It seems like there's a lot there's a lot that sort of, you know, weighs in the balance here. I mean, there are implications that could occur if this kind of spat goes on, sort of the threats that have been leveled from each side are things that make people wonder. Elon Musk saying, you know, maybe it's time for a third party, agreeing with maybe Trump needs to be impeached. Maybe we need to look into whether or not he was on the Epstein, you know, list of guests.
Came flat out and said he was. So
yeah, that's right. He did. That's right.
So it's gotten below the belt. It's gotten ugly. It's gotten really, right. I think awkward and uncomfortable. I don't know if you've ever had friends who broke up in the social media age. Thank God I've not had a breakup since social media became a thing. I don't think I would go out there and suddenly start unloading dirty laundry and those kinds of things. Thank God that this was not a romantic relationship, because I'm afraid there might be revenge porn involved if it had been. but it really is. Most of us know two people who have broken up, and you see their social media feeds and you just feel awkward and uncomfortable. And your friends put stuff out there. You're like, dude, don't do this. Don't make this so public. But now we're seeing it on this whole new and different level between two of the most powerful men on the planet, two of the wealthiest men on the planet, and it has gotten really ugly. What does it mean for us here in the, you know, out in the land as we see this unfold? Obviously, this has to have some impact politically. And does it give anybody who opposes the big, beautiful bill, who otherwise before was going to support it, particularly Louisiana Republicans in the Senate, or if it has to get kicked back to the House, if there are any changes in the Senate, does this affect how people may consider voting on the big, beautiful bill now that we've seen such high profile opposition from a man who was really the president's best buddy there for a few months?
I mean, it possibly could. I mean, the interesting thing about this is that up until this point, Trump has been able to get his way with the Congress. He has gotten exactly what he's wanted. We've had people raise objections to it, problems with it, and they have been pushed back. And there's no one that has stood up to Trump. And this is what makes this really interesting, is because you have someone who has enough power, enough money, someone who bankrolled the Trump campaign, supported it in the sense of through independent
and claimed he
spending.
Bought the election for Trump. Without him
That's
and his
right.
money,
That's right.
he claims
That's
Musk right. does, Trump would not have won.
Exactly. And you know, and there are a lot of people, I should point out, I think a lot of conservatives especially, who say, look, there's a big difference between the rhetoric of the Republican Party, the rhetoric of Trump, that you want to cut budgets, you want to cut the deficit, you want to cut government spending, you want to reduce the debt, and then the reality of things. There's a huge disconnect there. And here you have Elon Musk saying, look, there's a big disconnect here. What are you doing? You need, and he wants to play a role, Musk does, in the final outcome of this legislation, and to say, look, you know, you campaigned on this. This is what, you know, your movement wants. I think there are a lot of people, I mean, getting to your question of how this is going to have an effect, I think there are a lot of people who side with Elon Musk on this issue. A lot of conservatives, especially, who say that, you know, finally someone is saying, you know, you have to control spending. You've got to get the debt under control. And, you know, Trump's point about Musk is, well, he's upset about the electronic vehicle,
the electric car,
electric cars and that kind of thing. But it seems like Musk is actually taking a pretty principled position here on this issue. And so this may give support to people who share Musk's view and are glad someone has finally stood up to Trump on this issue, because up until this point, they've all simply rolled over because Trump is so powerful with just simply we see that in our own congressional delegation, I would say. Someone like Bill Cassidy, right? Someone who set aside professional standards in terms of his profession to go along with Robert Kennedy and all these other things that that Trump wants, because he knows if he doesn't, all Trump's got to do is tweet, you know, something terrible. You know, Bill Cassidy is a rhino.
If Musk doesn't pull him off of Twitter, yeah.
Exactly. Well, exactly. And so, but that's something that Musk doesn't have to worry about. He controls, he owns Twitter.
A Bill Cassidy or a John Kennedy, do they reconsider now voting for the big, beautiful bill?
Well, I think there are a lot of people, I think, Republicans who have problems with this legislation. And the big thing is, of course, the debt that it continues to perpetuate. And so I think it's going to give some comfort, and it depends on how this continues to play out. Right. I mean, if Musk will roll over and say, OK, whatever, and sort of disappear and pull back from all this. But if he keeps it up, I mean, he can spend money. Right. He can spend money. He can get behind other candidates in Republican primaries who take his position. He could play a big role in American politics in a way that really threatens the Trump's ability to get this legislation through. So you may see some sort of compromise, right? You may see some sort of backing down of the Trump people or changing. Changing the nature of the
Trump
of the legislation.
And Musk don't seem to me to be the type that are going to back down. Historically, mm-hmm. we don't see a lot of evidence of either of them backing down. And I think that's part of the issue here. Donald Trump may have underestimated what his interaction with Elon Musk could lead to, because here he brought the wealthiest man in the world into his tent and they were best buds there for a while. They were doing the YMCA together at Thanksgiving at Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate. They were really
Trump needed him.
Yeah. And it was great. But I think, and someone asked me, what do you really think caused this breakup? And I really believe that Musk felt that he left his companies, moved into the White House. Word was he was sleeping in his office in the West Wing.
Right.
And he
right.
was dedicating his life while his companies were losing money without his guidance and losing money because of his affiliation with Trump. But he worked really hard to cut the cost of the federal government. And he took mm-hmm. that on as his mission. And then Trump comes back with the big, beautiful bill and says pretty much to Musk, I know you worked hard to cut our spending. I know your goal was to reduce the size of federal government, but I'm putting forward a bill here that's going to increase the size of the federal government, pretty much telling him all of his work was for nothing because the bill was going in the opposite direction. And I think that really angered Musk.
Oh, absolutely. I think that is indeed part of the rift here. And even with, I mean, you know, the Doge promises, right, that he was going to cut $1 trillion out of the budget, huge amount. And it ended up being pared down to that. And now we're finding out that a lot of the bureaucracies are hiring back a lot of the people who were let go in the purges that occurred when Doge was at its height here of power. I think that's the reason for this. But getting back to what you said earlier about not backing down, I have to say, I mean, I think Trump backs down all the time on these issues, on the trade, on the tariffs, those sorts of things. He is a master of backing down and then changing the conversation. And I think that's probably what you're going to see here pretty soon.
Yeah, I think he would argue he doesn't back down. He forces the hand of the other party to do what he wants, and then he pulls the threat, as it were, off the table. I think we've seen that over and over again with Canada, with Mexico. He's trying to do it with China, where he threatens the huge tariffs. Then he gets some concessions from the other country and then claims that as a victory, not as a backing down.
Well, I mean, I think that's what they would claim, but I don't think he's got nearly what he would like to get from that. And I mean, and the same thing with Russia, too. I mean, this, you know, backing down from or backing away from that whole conflict.
He said he was going to end that in 24 hours.
Well, right. And he has just simply said, well, maybe they got to fight for a while. I mean, he changed it. He's a master of changing the conversation. And I suspect you're going to see the same thing here. I do believe that Musk has if there's anybody who has the power to alter sort of what that is in that bill, it is Musk. And he could provide cover to others who also want to do so. And I think he might get a concession. But I think I can see a scenario where that happens in which, you know, Trump, again, changes the conversation or says, look, we've renegotiated this. And then there's something else going on in the world that he focuses attention on.
Talking with LSU political science chair Robert Hogan. When we get back from this break, we'll continue this conversation. I invite you to join us at 504-260-1870. Who do you think wins in this very public, very ugly breakup battle that we're witnessing between Donald Trump and Elon Musk? Who ends up being more, who benefits more when this is said and done from all the ugly barbs, all of the grenades they're tossing at each other, all of the very public criticism? Does the president end up in an advantageous position, or does Musk get what he wants when this is all over, or do we all lose? Text and call now, 504-260-1870. Yeah, Elon Musk and Donald Trump having a very public breakup of their bromance, and in many ways, to me, it feels awkward and icky that we're kind of caught in the middle of it. And I'm hoping that it doesn't get even uglier, because it's kind of embarrassing right now. And I know people who have broken up, and I always tell them, don't go to social media. Don't air your dirty laundry with this person. Let's just, you know, move on and live our lives. But some people just cannot help themselves but to take to social media and share what they think when things go south, whether it's a friendship, a romance, or whatever, or in this case, a very public bromance. Robert Hogan, the chairman of the political science department at LSU, is our guest. Robert, where does this whole thing lead us?
Well, I think it's hard to say. It depends, again, on what you just said, is whether this continues to escalate. It seems to me that it could blow over. You could have some sort of reconciliation in which the two of them, you know, express their commitment to some, you know, principles and move on. Or it could go even further south, and you could see a situation where Elon Musk decides to to play a greater role in the political system. I mean, he could very easily. I mean, he has this huge platform with X that he can advertise and point out his positions on things. He can go after individual lawmakers in the Senate who are right now considering the legislation that's causing this contention. So,
There are already questions of if the bill could get through the Senate as is,
right,
as the president wanted, and it was going to be razor thin if it could pass. Does this swing the pendulum away from the president's side?
I think it gives aid and comfort to those who are opposed to it. Absolutely. I mean, some of the issues that they raise, especially with regard to the debt, the size of the tax cuts that are being continued that are heavily weighted towards wealthy individuals. I mean, this is a president who, you know, a lot of people describe the Trump movement as a populist movement, right? But it certainly is not in terms of economic populism. This bill is one that continues tax cuts that are overwhelmingly favoring those at the upper income of America. And it has severe cuts to Medicaid and to programs that benefit working class people, especially in a lot of these states and a lot of the states where that I think are going to matter a lot in terms of its ability to pass in the Senate.
You know, I think a lot of people who support Donald Trump have felt like it was the only position for them. House Speaker Mike Johnson, mm-hmm. House Majority Leader Steve Scalise, both of Louisiana. I think for them, the choice was obvious. They were 100% MAGA Republicans backing the president, and there really was no other option. But now when
Absolutely.
You have the wealthiest man in the world trying to launch a campaign, depending on how far he chooses to go with this, and Elon Musk, his influence, because of all of his money, has got to be a real concern for the Trump administration in terms of he now can win influence from people who otherwise thought before their only option was Trump.
No, absolutely. I mean, you're right. MAGA Mike. I mean, the only reason if he is speaker is Trump wanted him to be speaker, and at any moment he would lose that position. You're right. They have no choice but to support it. And when you have someone who has as much money and influence as Elon Musk does, it can shake things up and maybe change the nature of the debate and bring some of these issues back on the table. Now, the thing to consider is that think about what the direction that Musk wants this legislation to go in. It is one that probably is cutting more Medicaid and making, you know, the situation even better for Democrats. If you think about the Democrats in here, who are the opposition party, if they create a really bad bill, it's going to, and Democrats can blame it on them, whether they pass it or not. That can be a huge campaign issue in the midterm elections next year. So, you know, Musk has, you know, he has implications for the legislation that is passed and and has some severe implications, I think, for the Republican Party going into the next election.
Yeah, and I can just imagine if Musk wants to take this to the nth level, all these MAGA Republicans support Trump because they either A, really do support everything he stands for and agree with everything he says, or they're fearful of political retribution if they don't support everything he does and everything he says, as Bill Cassidy is finding out now, that he can mount a campaign against you that you may or may not be able to survive. Well, what if Elon Musk comes to you now and says, don't vote for this, or I'm going to bankroll your opponent in your next election. I'm going to find someone who can run against you, and I'm going to make sure they have enough money to do it, to dig up dirt on you and to really give you a run for your political future. Now you've got to worry about who to whom your allegiance needs to be.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if Musk's strategy is just to kill this legislation, I think that is, you know, I think that's a very strong possibility. Sowing seeds of doubt is an easy thing to do in the minds of voters, in the minds of elected officials. And, you know, but if his, you know, if he wants to make it a more draconian measure that's going to affect working class people, I think that's something that, you know, Republicans might be able to get around, but it's something they probably don't want to get around or support, because it's going to give tremendous advantage to the Democrats in the next election.
Robert Hogan, I know this is difficult because I'm asking you to analyze a situation that is nothing like anything we've ever seen in American politics before, not at this level by any means. And that can't be easy for you since we are in uncharted territory here.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've never had a situation like this where a president has brought in an individual into the White House, right? And he said, look, come in. I want you to help me make policy. I'm going to give you carte blanche, you know, ability to remake the bureaucracy. And he brought him in, and we've never seen anything like that. And then when there's a rift develops, you have given this person great credibility, right? Yesterday, you were trusting him with the keys to the White House. Literally
gave him a key to the White House, called him the most intelligent man on earth, went on and on about his, praised him for all of his accomplishments, and now he's the enemy.
And today he's the enemy. I mean, it starts to maybe make people rethink Donald Trump's judgment. I mean, you trust somebody and then you don't. So I don't know. This is completely uncharted territory. But the guy has the most. I mean, Musk has an enormous amount of power. Now he's also vulnerable in some respects. He leads a company, the Tesla company, and the people on that board have got to be thinking to themselves, "My gosh, what is this guy doing? And is it necessarily in the best interest of our company?" They have a responsibility to the shareholders of their company to do what they can to keep the stock price of that company high and going higher.
Which is exactly why President Trump is threatening to cancel SpaceX contracts with the federal government along the same lines, trying to hit him in the pocketbook.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you take away the lifeblood of that company to thrive, and you could destroy it. And so Elon Musk he's got a lot of money. He's very powerful, but he is also extremely vulnerable. So it'll be interesting to see how far he's willing to risk all of this. What is it worth to him to push this fight further on, or does he sort of, you know, fall back into the into the shadows, so to speak, and not at least not take a part in this great public debate that we're having in the United States right now.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Red Meat. Don't forget to smash that subscribe button for your favorite tasty assortment of conservative audio. And follow your local Odyssey talk station to get shows from these hosts delivered daily wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, stay hungry.